Hi, I'm Erin Marcus, former corporate executive turned entrepreneur and founder and CEO of Conquer Your Business. Welcome to the Ready Yet podcast. We're excited to bring you more than 100 episodes of interviews and insights designed to help entrepreneurs get the financial and emotional freedom they need in order to build a business and a life they're proud of. Hello, hello, and welcome to this episode of the Ready Yet podcast. And I'm excited about today's guest, Bruce Scheer. Why am I excited? I'm excited because we share a lot of the same take on business and what's required to do a great job, not just a good job, but a great job, and how it's necessary now. You got to kind of do a great job if you're going to survive in the market that we're living in right now. So before we get into all of how is it that you do a great job, why don't you give everyone a little more formal introduction of who you are and what you do?
Oh, sure. Hi, I'm Bruce Scheer, and I am so excited to be on your show, Erin. So thanks for allowing me to be a guest.
Awesome.
And my role, I'm CEO of InspireYourBuyers.com. And I've had this business, year 2000 is when we got started, right, as part of the dot-com crash.
Business.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I was in commercial real estate, many
moons later, still in business and thriving and having a lot of fun. So that's my business hat, where I do most all my commercial work. And then also I try to give back more, especially at this season in my life. So I'm president of National Speakers Association Northwest Chapter. At this point as well. And boy, oh boy, are they keeping me busy. We've got about 67 members and we're trying to double our membership. And yeah, that's a lot of fun too.
Yeah, because you got to be careful. I always said, and I've been on boards of organizations like that, because I absolutely agree. If you're, these are mutually beneficial relationships we're trying to create. And be careful about letting any of those entities know that you're willing to help.
Right? Yeah. That takes on a life of its own. Absolutely. Voice of experience.
Awesome. So we were talking, and this is what I really want to share with people. As we were getting ready to decide what we really could have an impact for folks today, we were talking about your approach and understanding and clarity around the need to tell a good story, combined with what I've been seeing lately, not just me and not just lately, who are we kidding? But for the last 12, 18 months, it's no longer sufficient to be good. You've currently got to be great at your business in order to stay in business. So let's dive into that a little bit, because I think humans buy from humans and humans connect via story. So it's more important than ever to be able to tell your story. So I don't need to set you up any more than that. This is what you know how to do. Like, let's dive into the meat of that. Tell me, why is this so important, and what people should be doing?
Boy, if I could, Erin, I want to start with a point of vulnerability. And this was a while ago. My life has changed.
You moved past the emotional attachment.
Yes.
Got it.
So I was out in Singapore, and as a budding, newly minted MBA student, but I just got my MBA, went out to Singapore to start my career. And the head of human resources saw what I was doing, and I luckily, they gave me way more responsibility than I deserved at the time. But I represented University of California, Berkeley, this negotiation institute, and then another company called TMI, Time Manager International, is what they stood for. And so I was running around selling seminars. But the head of HR for this multinational company that had all these franchises that were given to me, he said, "Bruce, I've got a pretty rich Rolodex. Work with my assistant and we'll get you meetings." And I'm like just going, "Man, thank you." So I got together with this assistant, and she set me up with a meeting that I couldn't believe. This guy was head of HR, but head of HR for one of Singapore's largest multinational government-backed entities. And I had a private personal meeting with him. And this was big time. This guy was probably costing his organization maybe $10,000 an hour. And I wasn't at that rate. So I go in
no
and
reason
I
to be in the room
as my newly minted MBA self. So, but I thought I was hot stuff. So anyways, I go into his, you know, I get to his office, big, huge waiting room, wonderful assistant. And she says, hey, please wait for Mr. Lee. He's wrapping up some things and we'll bring you in. I'm like, oh, sweet, my opportunity. So she, you know, finally I get called and she brings me into his office, and his office is about as big as a football field. And he had this living room set up. And so I got to sit on one area and he was on another, and we just got into a big, good old chit chat session. He was curious why I was in Asia and, you know, what am I doing there? Blah, blah, blah. And so just back and forth, chit chat, chit chat, chit chat. Finally, I see him start to squirm. And then he's like going, hey, Bruce, I got a very busy day today. You know, why don't we agree to meet again at some point? And I'm like, just going, oh, but we didn't talk about all the seminars that I had to offer. He's like going, send me some information. That would be great. And so I get up and thank you, Mr. Lee, shake his hand, turn around. His assistant is waiting at the door for me with the meanest scowl I think I've ever seen on a human's face. She, if there were darts, they were coming out of her eyes at me. And I immediately, I'm a sensitive guy, and I realized something went way wrong in her eyes. So I walk out, and then she just stood up to me. She was shorter, looks up at me and says, Bruce, you just wasted an hour and a half of my boss's time. And he's got a really busy day today. And she was furious. And I'm so sorry. I get out of there. And I'll tell you, that's a perfect example of not having a story. And leading that selling conversation with a story that sizzles what I talk about. And so I learned, so, you know, from that very abrupt, horrible selling experience for myself and Mr. Lee, hey, there's got to be a better way. And that kind of set me on a career path of doing this for multiple different clients. And for people who are watching this, and I'll mention verbally, you know, I've done, you know, put together go-to-market stories at Sizzle for multiple big, huge brands, Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, Adobe, Emphasis, SAP, et cetera, all the blue chip, you know, big, huge companies, especially in the tech space over the years. And I've learned a lot. And so I do that. I still work with these, you know, gigantuan enterprise accounts on their new go-to-market initiatives around new products, new solutions, new partnerships. And then I also do that for, you know, scale-ups, I call them, organizations that are trying to grow and try to go quickly. Aaron, I'm not focused typically on the company that's trying to stay in business, as we started off in that intro. You know, my goal is really to help them go to the next level.
But I think, you know, to that point right now, though, those are no longer two different companies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am watching, and I have watched people who have been in business for 10, 15, 20 years in the small business space, 1, 5, 10 million, on the verge of losing it all.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to me right now, you almost have to decide, are you scaling or are you leaving?
Yeah. Yeah. For many, many will find themselves in that situation, especially in the competitive situations
exactly.
that they're in. You know, gosh, I work with organizations. They might have 20 direct competitors all saying the same thing.
Also, well, like, so you know, that's
how do
point.
They stand
it's
apart
also,
from that?
Right. How do you stand apart from that? Because I know in the, because I have the big fancy corporate background as well. And then I've been a solopreneur and I've been a small business, like I've been at all the different levels, right? And I was working in the financial services. So we were in the big fan, like, you know, like you were in the big fancy version of business as well as the scrappy, you know, the scrappy feet on the ground version
sure,
of business.
Sure.
And the one mistake I will, to your point of us, they all sound the same. The one mistake I watch small business owners make over and over and over and over and over again is they're trying to emulate someone else and not being original in their story.
Yeah, that's a big mistake. The other thing I see, gosh, day in and day out, because I've got CEO in my title, I'm kind of a target for lots of spam. And, you know, I had a founder reach out to me the other day, like going, hey, Bruce, we've got a new solution. I can't wait to show it to you.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I can wait. I'll wait forever. I can wait
a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If we're having a meeting all about your stuff, that ain't going to happen. You know, that's not a way to go to market with a story that sizzles.
So where does somebody start? Because I do know, and that's a perfect example. I talk to people all the time when I tell them, you've spent so much time, money, energy, and effort to create your processes and your outcome that you're very obsessed with it, and it gives it a false sense of prioritization, right? So where does somebody start creating a story that sizzles and getting out of their own way and making it all about them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's the first point, just that realization. Hey, you know, we do have it's not even a story. We show up and let everybody know all about us, just like what that founder tried to do with me. Right. I can't wait to demo you to death, you know, is what he effectively
right. Oh, God,
he was
God.
Saying. So what, you know, that's first and foremost, you know, what's that story? And it needs to be buyer-centric. Is what I say. It's not your story. We, you know, who's the hero in the story? It's not the product. I know a lot of people, you know, read Olga V's book and, you know, hey, make the product the hero. And a lot of people are oriented that way. And it's not that. It's really coming in touch with your buyer and building that narrative around your buyer. Your buyer is hero. So that's
the product, your product and or service is nothing more than a vehicle. It really is nothing more than a vehicle to get somebody from where they are to where they want to be.
Exactly. No, I 100% agree with what you said there. Absolutely. And guess what? That vehicle is way back in the storyline. You know, it's towards the end, but it's not the end. But it's towards the end.
Towards the end.
So what I do typically is I talk about five key elements of what you need to have in terms of a story. And I'll flash that on the screen here. You know, five key elements to have a story that sizzles.
Yes.
And so for the listening audience, it's target the right buyer. That's kind of job one. And you wouldn't believe, you know, when I'm working with accounts, Aaron,
oh, I would.
the amount of contradiction and misalignment yeah. around who's our target, you know, what's the target industry, what's the target organization, and who within that account typically is involved in the decision making. So we
that's,
need to,
yeah.
That's kind of job one, just getting really in touch with where's our opportunity for growth and where do we point that, you know, you can see my logo here for the viewing audience, Inspire Your Buyers, and there's an arrowhead. Where do we put all the wood? Where do we point mm-hmm. this thing? You know, and that's where we begin. And that's where I start. And it's funny, Adobe acquired an organization, and before they acquired them, I had the opportunity to put together their story and their story that sizzles. And I talked to 10 executives and I caught 10 different stories and 10 different variations of where our target is. And so I love getting some focus and alignment there and some concerted thinking around that. Yeah. And very often people get that fundamentally wrong, Aaron. A buddy of mine called me up from Singapore and we were yakking about stuff, and he was having a challenging time selling English language platform into the Chinese market. And this platform just had everything going for it. It, you know, AI, blah, 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 you know, just a fancy platform designed to help students get to English mastery very quickly, accelerated learning, if you would. And so we start breaking down, you know, I just go, hey, just in a word or two or three, no more than four, what's your value proposition? I mean, I'm just curious. And he mentioned confidence. And I'm like going, confidence, unpack that a little bit more. And he goes, well, students that use our language platform, they get rapid confidence because they start to master the English language quickly. And once they have that confidence, they can open doors. They can go to the elite institutions in the United States to study, you know, advanced degrees. They can get cool jobs. It really just opens up so much opportunity. And we give them the confidence in their English language to do that. And I go, man, that sounds cool. So you're selling the platform to students. And he goes, "What?" And I go, "You talked about confidence and how students care about that. So you're selling the platform to students." He goes, "No, no, not at all." I go, "Oh, interesting. Who are we selling it to?" And he goes, "Well, we're selling it to English language schools, and we're trying to, get into the owners or the people overseeing platform decisions like that within these English language institutions in China." I go, "Oh, okay, got it, got it. So are you selling them confidence?" He goes, "No, the student."
Right.
I
I sell to
go, you
the
know what I mean? So
person who
is it
writes you the
really?
check. So
So
I say that
once we
as
figure that
well.
out, who's the
Right.
decision maker and decision making body in a lot of the complex B2B decisions that need to be made? What are we selling them?
What are
What's the
we
value
selling? I said
proposition
the,
for them?
what is it? The only exception, you always target your buyer with two exceptions. Toys and diamonds. Toys and diamonds. Toys are bought by adults but marketed to children, and diamonds are bought by men but marketed to women, and everything else target your
Too
buyer.
funny. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, I learned that a long time ago, though. A professor taught me about dog food. Who are you selling dog food to?
Not selling it to the dog.
You're not, dogs aren't buying. Last time I checked, anyways, it's the owners. And he has six different segments of owners that have completely different needs and
So
completely
true.
different stories. And he's done that for, one of the largest dog food brands in the world. But so I learned quite early, target that buyer and
Yes.
build
Not
your
just
narrative.
client avatar, but who's making the buying decision?
Exactly. But again, in complex B2B decision making that I'm involved with quite often, a lot of the buyers that we target are making sometimes even multi-million dollar decisions
Well,
and career ending decisions if things
and
don't
that,
go
see, and
well.
this is where I think B2B gets it wrong. High level B2B, because I closed a $10 million deal with Prudential in a buffet line. Because you still have to remember that even at the highest level, those buyers are human.
Oh, yeah,
Those
absolutely.
buyers are human. And to your point, they're worried about making the wrong decision. They're more worried because career-ending decisions, like you said. So targeting the buyer, even in the potentially most complex, like we were renegotiating the way an entire line of insurance got paid for an entire downline. So $10 million a year was what we were looking at. And yet the person, when I talked to him about why we couldn't come to an agreement, what was the holdup? We were negotiating the companies, and what was the holdup? What was the holdup? He literally said to me, "Well, I can't take less than XYZ to my boss." It had nothing to do with anything except he needed to make sure he didn't look stupid and bad at his job.
Absolutely.
So when you're targeting your buyers, it doesn't matter. How come? Like, I would argue the more complex the situation, the more simple you have to get.
That and then I think I love where you're going with that. Once you have an idea about who that buyer is, who's involved in the decision-making body, typically there's a buying committee for some of the bigger
Right.
deals, including that guy's boss. But so who's the ultimate decision maker? Typically, sometimes that moves around, but you need to have a baseline understanding of that and then build your narrative for them. And the one thing I love to think about, somebody taught me this a long time ago, thank goodness, but you're trying to make that decision maker be the hero.
Oh my gosh,
And
yes.
ultimately, you want them to be promoted.
Well,
So
and going
if that's
back
your
to, right.
mindset,
I
how do you
mean,
get that person promoted? Then you can build the story around that ethos, that mindset.
right. And I learned that in the paid speaking business. My job as a paid speaker is to make the event planner look amazing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. They want to be hired again.
They
You
want to be hired again. The last thing you want to do is make your
bet.
event planner look bad, right?
Oh, big time,
That's the
big
goal.
time.
Make the event planner look good. Good.
So anyways, target that buyer, do think about, hey, how am I going to get them promoted and start to build the narrative from there. So
Yes.
what I'll do next is just kind of lay out some of the concepts for you back to those key elements. You know, so we targeted the right buyer. So we got to figure that out. And for the viewing audience or listening audience, I'm showing some, you know, that is some decision making in its own right. Where are we going to bet our story on? And then really focus there. The next key step is really what I call spotlight the problem. So, Aaron, when you think about a spotlight that's shining upon something, pretty much everything else fades into background or black. You can't even see it because that light is so brightly shined on the problem domain. So you can see for the viewing audience, they're seeing a big hairy ball with a spotlighting it. And that's what you're trying to do. And one of my clients a long time ago taught me this beautiful term. He calls it the big ugly.
The big ugly.
You want to spotlight the big, ugly, nasty thing that's holding them back or preventing them from doing something or just costing them arms and legs, you know, and shine a light upon that so they can see that and see it for all its ugliness and see it in a new light, a new spotlight.
I think that to me is the differentiator. You know, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given is, you don't impress people with your solution. You really don't. Impress people with a better understanding of the problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that is so enlightened. Yeah, I rarely see that, but that's what I try to do. I was working with a CEO for a early stage company. It was really fun. I had to just beat him with a stick. No more talking about the solution until we nail this problem. Right. No more. I don't want to hear about it. I need no more attributes. I just want to talk about the problem state, the attributes of that problem state, and why it's so harmful, and make sure we can see it in a way that buyers typically don't see it. Let's focus right there.
Because more people in general, humans in general, move away from pain faster than they move towards pleasure. So they're going to buy a pain-based situation a lot faster than they'll buy an opportunity-based.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you must have read the book. It's Daniel Kahneman's book. Let me share that with you right now. It's called Prospect Theory and Lost
Aversion. Oh, there you go. I have not. I'll have to check it
out. Oh, definitely check it out. On this little chart that the viewing audience can see, and I'd encourage everybody to hit pause. This is really rich. But the problem has twice as much gravity as the opportunity or the gain. And so that's what they call the whole concept is prospect theory and loss aversion. If you want to sell something, start with that loss aversion. Start with, you know, how much is it costing you? Oh my God, you know, really take it deep and heavy there, because that's twice as motivating as the opportunity. And again, back to that story that you were selling to Prudential, you know, that person wanted to keep the job, you know,
And simultaneously, we were their biggest distributor in the brokerage world. So he had a dual problem of keeping us happy, so we continued to be the number one distributor in his brokerage, as well as keeping his boss happy on the finance P&L side.
No, Aaron, you're enlightened. I know that you are probably just an amazing seller. I'm sure you are now. But what's next?
My approach to selling though is very like, here's all the cards on the table.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I learned about selling, while positioning is important and story is important and all of what you're talking about, I 100% agree is important. There's nothing about this that needs to be tricky and or manipulative.
No, not at all.
I used to put together these huge multi-million a year deals by saying, look, here's all the money in the bucket. If we do this, this is your part of the bucket. This is our part of the bucket. This is what it takes. You want to do it, you don't want to do it. Because I didn't have to be sneaky.
No.
Because the other truth is, right? What is that saying? When the waters go up, all boats rise.
Let's take a quick break.
Intentional lead generation is the missing piece in most business owners' growth strategy. It's the bridge that moves people from experiencing your marketing and into actual sales conversations with you. If you want to learn how to bridge this gap in your business, join us on May 16th for the Lead Gen Masterclass and learn how to work smarter, not harder, to grow your business. You can register at conqueryourbusiness.com. We've made it easy for you. Just look for the pop-up.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm sure you learned early on, you know, you got to build that trust, and that is open book, you know,
Open book.
really getting there and making sure there's a win-win-win, you know, for everybody, for you,
Yeah.
that buyer. And
Otherwise, none of this matters.
I'd say win-win-win-win. There's lots of wins, but for you, the buyer, the organizations behind you, maybe the strategic partners that are involved
Right.
for really big deals, everybody, you know, everything's got to work right economically and et cetera.
I had a client who is an amazing guy, great guy. He used to teach chess in high school and chess clubs and stuff, and he had written a really cool book, actually. The book was very good. Can't remember the name of it, about taking like the rules and lessons from chess and applying it to business. But he was having just a nightmare of a time getting booked and getting for larger clients and getting booked for paid speaking, and he couldn't understand why. And I finally explained, I go, "You're because you're playing the game like chess. You are trying to win. And as soon as somebody feels that you are trying to win, they feel that you're
Boy.
trying to make them lose. And now you're on the opposite side of the table from someone you're claiming to want to help. This is not a good approach to sales."
No.
No.
You know, those are typically what another really smart guy taught me a long time ago, low consideration techniques.
Right. And he didn't mean it. He thought he was being really cool, but he was just so entrenched in this concept of chess and how to apply chess to real life. He was a little over applying.
They weren't both in the same boat,
They were
rowing in the
not,
same
these are not
direction.
the
Absolutely. So anyways, back to my storyline, the five key elements here:
Yes.
target the right buyer, spotlight the problem, and then this is what typically gets really tricky. A lot of times people, I go, okay, now that we've talked about the problem, let's showcase the solution. I'm like, no, wait. You know, back to your point, that's where you can talk about what life on the beach looks like.
Right.
That's what I call envision the outcome, and co-construct that, just like it sounds like you were very good at. Co-construct that problem domain. How much is that costing you today? Really get into that. Now it's time to co-construct the game. What are we looking at a year or two from now? You know, what gosh, I had a one smart buyer I was dealing with from Citibank. This operations leader said to me, Bruce, when you go shout about what we did together a year from now, when you go try to sell this whole same thing to other clients, what are you going to say we achieved? Because he wanted to work with me to envision the outcome. Isn't that a smart, enlightened buyer?
I say that as a seller. I will say to somebody, okay, if a year from now, if 6 months, if we decide to do this, and at the end of our engagement together, you went, "Oh my God, this was the best decision I've ever made." What would have happened to make you feel that way?
What metrics did you hit? You know,
What
how
would
much of a promotion
it
did you get around Christmas time? Your
because,
bonus?
right, you would be amazed at what people tell you. And I had going back to speaking, because I know it's something we have in common, I had one woman tell me, "Well, the thing that would be amazing is when you landed in town, you would just let me know." And I'm thinking, to me, that's the low bar, because my dad was a Chicago cop. So our whole thing is just let people know where you are. I don't care what you're doing, just let everyone know you're alive. And I'm thinking, imagine as an event planner not knowing until 10 o'clock that morning when I'm supposed to be on stage that I'm actually there.
Oh my
That's got to
goodness.
be horribly stressful.
nervous.
Right? So how easy of a solution, you know, what look at the brilliance she gave me.
To keep your client informed. Absolutely. Cool. So
Yeah.
that's envisioning that outcome. And you can
Yes.
see with my wife's beautiful illustrations for the viewing audience, you know, that you're kind of painting a picture, and she painted a rainbow there. But what do unicorns and rainbows look like, and you know, in
He's a
relation
unicorn,
to
and I
what
know
we
it.
achieved together? And then from there, so you know, we did problem, we did outcome. Now we can get into how land. And I call that showcase the solution. So you're showcasing it. You're not kind of deconstructing it and getting into all the features, functions, and little mini benefits. You're looking at the totality. Typically in a B2B space that I live in, you know, some of these are huge decisions. And like you said earlier, we need to keep it just terribly simple. So how do we talk about the how in a big solution type of way? Not all the many little bits and pieces. Because once you go there, then that decision maker is going to go, I think you should be talking to people downstairs, not at my
You're
level.
just going to confuse your buyer.
Not too much, you know, keep it tight and easy to understand. So, and there's some, you know, there's some principles how to do that and how to communicate that visually so they get it. What's that look like? And so from there, so that was the fourth thing that we did. So we targeted the right buyer. We showcased, or excuse me, we spotlighted the big problem. Then we moved on to envisioning that outcome. We just showcased the solution in a way that was simple and they could understand, and differentiating, where they're like, oh, that sounds a little bit different than the other guys down the block that are talking to me. Now, what we can do is say, hey, based on my experience and conversation we just had, why don't we talk about next steps? Here's what I'd like to recommend we do. And that's what I call prescribed next steps. And so that's where we lay out, hey, typically at this point in time, you know, we'll set up another meeting where I'll do a little bit more discovery with some of your lieutenants and figure out just how big is this problem, how much is it costing your organization. Then typically what we want to do is come back and share that information with a, you know, committee that of course would include you, sir, and others. And just make sure we all see the opportunity that we want to strive for. That alignment session really is helpful most often. And then if we are all aligned and that all works well, we do have a case for change there at that meeting. Then typically what we do is we'll do a proof of concept or do some other things to really help gain confidence and this is the right path. And then if that works right, then we're contracting together and then putting together a roadmap, et cetera. How does that sound to you? And what else would you add to these next steps? You know, and get their involvement in co-constructing the next steps. And so anyways, that, you know, these are the five key elements, Aaron. And as a buddy of mine likes to say, deceptively simple, mastered by few, because I
Well,
rarely see this in the organizations I work with.
and what's interesting to me is somebody who, like I said, I've sold at the multi-million dollar corporate level as a solopreneur, as a small business owner. This is never different. This is the process. Like, this works when I was working with families with aging parents and the downsize process. This is exactly what we did. This work, like I gave, you know, when I was in corporate and we were doing big fancy deals and fancy conference rooms. Like, this is the process. It's, you know, people use different words. I, you know, as sales story that sizzles, you can apply this at any level, and you need to apply this at every level.
I'd love to kind of round out if we could with a story about how my brother sold me an old fishing boat. And this one, I'll tell you, it's really funny. But my brother, in the beginning of the pandemic, you know, this is getting towards Christmas time of the pandemic, he gave me a call on a Saturday morning and said, "Hey, Bruce, guess what?" And my brother doesn't call me all the time. I call him, I'm like going, "Hey, this is kind of special. I don't know what is up." And he's like, just going, "Dad wants to sell his boat." And immediately, Aaron, I just have this oh shit moment. You know, my dad's 90, and my brother, just to add pain and gravity to the whole thing, and he wants to sell it on Craigslist. I'm like, oh, double shit. And I'm like, just going, oh, sounds like I'm selling his boat. And he goes, yeah, maybe. But funny enough, Bruce, I thought you might want to buy it. And I'm like going, I might want to buy it. Why in the hell would I want to buy a old, nasty, polluting fishing boat? I go, you know, does it have an ultra wide monitor like the one on my desk? Is it electric like my Tesla? You know, I love gadgetry and spending money on crap like that, Aaron. But and Steve, my brother, goes, no, none of that, none of that. And I go, then why would I want to buy it? He goes, how long have you been living on an island? And I live on an island across from Seattle Airport called Vashon Island. He goes, how long have you been living on that island? I'm like going, 16 years. He goes, huh, 16 years living on an island without a boat. I would just feel trapped. I go, trapped? what do you mean trapped? He goes, well, what happens if the ferry goes down? I go, yeah, no, it goes down every now and then. You know, we deal with it. And he goes, yeah, I don't know. That just wouldn't sit right with me. And he goes, what happens if that big earthquake hit? Anything left of I-5 is going to get wiped out by a big, you know, tsunami. I go, actually, now, interesting. And he goes, but that's not going to happen. You know, that's 50 to 500 years away from now. Yeah, probably not. Well, I don't feel trapped. I got to go. I'll call you back tomorrow. I'll figure out how to sell this stupid thing. So anyway, again, glad that he called me on a Saturday morning, because that night I didn't sleep so well. You know, my family was home. You know, the kids were back because of the pandemic, giving me a second chance to be a great dad. And I'm like just going, hey, I got to really protect the family. And I kind of tossed and turned, thought, I am feeling trapped. So I woke up first thing in the morning and I gave him a call, you know, early in the morning. Steve, guess what? I'm feeling trapped.
He Thank goes, you,
yeah,
Barry.
I thought you would. He goes, I go, why else should I buy that stupid boat? And he's like, just going, well, dude, you're on an island. And did you know about every mile around your vicinity of the Puget Sound, there's a marina? And your wife loves to eat out. And you guys are trapped on the island. You guys could go literally marina by marina, order takeout, because they're all still trying to operate, and just have a great meal and have the time of your lives. And I'm like just going, wow. Fun and adventure really lodged into my brain. I'm like going, that sounds cool. So he sold me on that. And then after that, I just go, would Dad's old nasty fishing boat do that? He goes, oh, sure. Yeah, it's got 14 inches of draft. Yeah, you could get out and about. If the weather kicks up and there's waves, just go slow. But yeah, it'll go anywhere you want it to go, no problem. I'm like just going, oh my God, this sounds awesome. How do I get it? What do I do with this thing? And he's like just going, do you still have that old Lexus? And I go, yeah. He goes, is there a trailer hitch on it by any chance? I go, yeah, there totally is. I put my mountain bikes on it. He goes, is it 2 inches? And I go, funny enough, it is. He goes, yeah. Dad's hitch is, the trailer's a 2-inch trailer. Yeah, if that thing's wired, you're ready to go. I go, and he goes, do you still have that parking lot up by the yurt? You know, I got a fairly big piece of property on that. I go, yeah, definitely. And he goes, yeah, just stick it there. I'd be fine, out of the way. And then that weekend, I drove 400 miles to go get that boat and bring it back.
You didn't know that you wanted.
Oh, yeah, no. So just, you know, literally, he followed that to a T. You know, he spotlighted the right problem. You know, I was trapped. And then he helped me envision, you know, this desired outcome of fun and happy wife. You know, I love being married to my wife, want to keep that going. And then he brought me into the solution. But he didn't talk about the fact that it was 25 horsepower engine, that it was a 4-stroke, and it was impeccably maintained. He just brought me into the land of boating and sold me on the big solution of boating. And then he just took me down the path of next steps. You know, he taught me how to tow it, store it, maintain it. And he was definitely on the call, like I'm sure you were, as a rock star sales rep, just answering questions along the way. And that's how he sold me an old nasty fishing boat that I never would have envisioned my life that I would have owned.
You know, but the big question, have you used the boat?
Oh, I'm already on to boat number 2 and thinking about boat number 3. No, I am sold. Yeah.
He didn't sell you a boat. He sold you a rabbit hole.
No, he sold me a lifestyle, man. Yeah, no, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. But anyways, these principles, like you said, you know, it can be small business all the way up to the enterprise accounts that I serve. You know, these principles apply. And a lot of times I laugh. It took me, you know, over 20 years to learn these disciplines that are, again, deceptively simple, but mastered by few. If you follow absolutely. This, it works. I'm working right now with the CEO of, you know, he's got about 25 staff and trying to take it to the next level. And he's been successful, Aaron, for 30 years, but he wants to go to a new place. Let's go. And the story is one of the fastest. You know, I do see it as the tip of this spear that I'm showing in my logo. You know, you nail that story. That's one edge. next edge is nail the conversation. That behind all that wood is the next steps. How do you get that buyer to buy and support that buying journey? If you get that lined up right, you can really do some amazing things.
Awesome. This is fantastic. I absolutely love it. If people want to continue this conversation with you, and I highly recommend they do, what is the best way to reach out to you? Where can they find you? All of the things.
Yeah, some of the wisdom that I shared here and some of these practical tips, they can be found in a book called Inspire Your Buyers, Go to Market with a Story That Sizzles. And Aaron, I don't know if this little emblem was on the book cover last time we spoke, but now it's a number one bestseller on Amazon.
All right, there you go.
Across five different categories. It's really done well and well for a lot of people. I read the reviews. I just love them that, you know, people are talking about how they've applied it in their businesses. So that's been super cool. So you can find that on Amazon. There's an Audible version. If you like this voice and it didn't put you to sleep, definitely get the Audible version. But there's Kindle and paperback and hard copy. Also, I'm featured in another book this year that's also a bestseller. And it's called, very bashfully and humbly, the Most Amazing Marketing Book Ever. And it's by 35 collaborators. And you can find these books also on Amazon, also on my own website of inspirebuyers.com/books. And then where you can also schedule time with me if you think you need some kind of advanced support. And I love hanging out on LinkedIn. So please connect with me there. I'm B. Shear on LinkedIn.
We will make sure that we have all the links for everyone to just, you know, make sure that you are just one click away. Thank you so much for your time, your insights, your energy. I think these are concepts that the more you can hear them phrased in different ways, they're gonna start to land with people.
Yeah. No, it's a funny enough, it's a different type way to sell. When I bring this logic to people who sold like you for a living, intuitively they got it. They just didn't have the distinctions. But you know, that really helped make their careers and the businesses behind them highly successful. Junior sellers typically go, whoa, this is fundamentally different. I thought I'm supposed to demo when I show up. Right. And no, we're not supposed to do that. Here's the right way to sell.
Stop doing that.
Please,
you mean I'm not supposed to send you a sales page long DM on LinkedIn before we even actually met? No, please stop doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So again, thank you for your time, your insight, your energy, all of your information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Ready Yet podcast. I truly enjoy bringing these stories of success and inspiration to you. Please join us in our mission to empower entrepreneurs to be in charge of their businesses and in charge of their lives by sharing this with anyone you know who would benefit from our tactical and motivating advice, leaving us a review, and letting us know if there are any particular topics you would really appreciate hearing about. See you next time.